Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, July 5th, 2013. I am Jackie McIntosh, and I'm joined here in studio today by Danielle Pilon and Carissa Thorpe. Welcome.
Thank you.
Animal Voices is Vancouver and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. Today is our Whales in Captivity show, where we can highlight, where we will highlight some of the many issues facing whales or cetaceans in general that are kept in aquaparks, or otherwise known as whale jails, all around the world. Earlier this week, I had the pleasure of speaking with Gabriella Cowperthwaite about her powerful and important film, Blackfish, which is about a captive orca named Tilikum. This film shows the often devastating consequences of keeping such highly intelligent and emotionally advanced animals in captivity. It also goes into the very shady side of the aqua park industry, highlighting deaths and injuries to trainers and the many attempts to obscure the truth. We will share this interview with you later today. And Empty the Tank's International Day of Protest is coming up July 27th, and we will have the pleasure of speaking with Annalise Sorg of No Whales in Captivity about this exciting and important event, and as well as to discuss the organization itself and the struggles that take place for marine mammals at the Vancouver Aquarium, along with many other places. So we have a great show for you today, so please stay tuned.
All right, this is Danielle here. We're going to talk a little bit about animals in captivity, and specifically whales for the theme of the show. We might talk a little bit of elephants as well, because that's a big theme. But I'm going to preface this by just saying, first off, that as much as zoos and aquariums, as we know, claim to be about education, and I'm sure that some of the trainers and keepers there even believe that they're doing a good thing. I mean, it's all about profit, and that's it. Like, these are multi-billion dollar industries, and they make a lot of money on capturing, well, they don't do it themselves, obviously. They have people that capture the animals for them and separate them from their families, and then they train them to entertain people. And really, if you think about it, they're starving the animals. They train them by food deprivation, and
yeah. And what are people really learning? Like whale or any actual animal in captivity, wild animal in captivity, is not going to behave as they would in the wild. They're going to be showing signs of stress and signs of just deprivation in general, like sensory deprivation, like you were mentioning earlier, Danielle.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like one of especially whales, one of their main senses, one of their primary sense actually, is their sonar and their ability to see with sound. And when they're put in those tanks, you are basically forcing them. It's forced sensory deprivation. And I was saying earlier, like, some people like to go in those, you know, sensory deprivation tanks, if you've heard of these.
Yeah,
there's these tanks, and you go in those, and you have, like, there's, like, you float in water, and you have, like, earplugs, and then you're just in there for, like, an hour and a half, and people paid money for that. But if you're not a person who likes that, like, say for me, I'm horribly claustrophobic. If I was just, like, forced in that situation, I would be terrified. I would be just miserable. And that's basically what we're doing to these elephants in these tanks. Like, they can't. It's basically like living in a bathtub and not being able to see or communicate and be away from your family. Like, first off, you were taken from your family really forcefully. I mean, they are literally dragged, kicking and screaming. And then they are starved so that they'll perform these tricks, and then they learn to perform these tricks, and they think that the only way to, you know, get food is to do these things, so that's why they do them. And we think they're just doing them because they want to entertain us and they're friends with their trainers. And I'm sure some of them in some instances have, you know, created relationships with certain trainers, and I've seen this in some instances with like some elephants in zoos, for example. I've seen some people create relationships with these animals. Oh, and actually in Marineland, there was that one trainer, whistleblower also, who started that thing against Marineland, and he had a really good relationship with that walrus he was training. But yeah, that ended up being a really horrible situation.
As they often do. And I think, like you were saying, too, like, people like to go in these sensory deprivation tanks. But I think the reason that people enjoy it is because our lives are so, especially if you live in a city, you're so overly loaded with sensory information. You just have, like, an hour of away time from it. But then you want to get back into reality. You want to live your life. You don't want to be stuck, you know, in a jail.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, for these animals, it's a jail.
Yeah. And I don't know if everyone's familiar with the famous dolphin trainer, Rick O'Berry. Yeah, you heard of him?
He was the guy who did the Cove.
Oh, well, he was part of the group that sort of helped the Cove. And he's a very famous dolphin trainer, and he turned animal activist. He was famously known for capturing and training the whales, or dolphins rather, that played the Flipper in the 1960s show Flipper, which actually he feels started the whole craze of being obsessed with dolphins and whales and wanting to watch them. And he had some really great quotes that I got from watching the Cove recently, which was fun. Actually, you know what? It is hard to watch if you're really empathetic to animals and their feelings and stuff, but compared to a lot of documentaries that I've watched, it's not as
graphic.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, graphic. It's like, yeah, you see definitely like the Cove and like all the blood in the water is just red, but you don't like, it's not like Earthlings.
And yeah, anyone that's seen Earthlings, it's not Earthlings,
yeah,
but it's still
heart-wrenching
for
sure. It's definitely, but it's such a good film. If you have not seen it, like, definitely go see it. And also a really good film that I watched recently is about this orca whale, Lolita, and the film was called Lolita, Slave to Entertainment, and she was the last survivor of the largest whale roundup in history, which was the Puget Sound roundup of orcas, and it was a pod of, I think, over 100 or so, and they, they broke up the pod. That's how they captured them, was they broke up the family, and of course the family's smart, and they're like, we'll have the elders and the youngsters go over here, and we're going to distract the other group, and we're going this way. And then they get into Puget Sound. That's the Pen Cove is the cove that they got them into, and they ended up, a lot of youngsters died, because unlike people, whales are not automatic air breathers. They can close off their blowhole, stop breathing, and just not breathe anymore. So a lot of them, sometimes they'll do that just to, like, I don't want to live anymore and just stop because this is too awful. So some, that happened to some. And then Lolita's mother died trying to save her. And then along with Lolita, a lot of youngsters, I think there was seven other youngsters, including her, and they got sent to all around the world. And she got sent to the Miami Seaquarium, which is actually the seaquarium that Rick O'Berry was a trainer at. And, just a lot of just horrible.
Well, speaking on what you were saying about them being able to, I guess, commit suicide or just stop breathing. In the Cove as well, the trainer, Rick O'Berry.
Yeah, it was Rick O'Berry,
He mentioned that was what
happened to his Cassie.
That was the change that happened,
Just so you know, like, there was five other dolphins playing the role of Flipper on the TV show, and Cassie was the one who played Flipper most. They're all, by the way, these are all females. Like, that's mostly what people want. They want female dolphins when they round up and capture whales or dolphins, because I guess they're easier to train, maybe? I don't know. People just always want females, and yeah, Kathy was the one that he said really turned it around for him. When the Flipper show stopped, she was put into a tank, and he could tell right away that she was not happy there. And he said, he says there's no other word in the English language that can describe it. What happened was she just swam into his arms, stopped breathing, and floated to the bottom of the tank.
That's heartbreaking, but thank you for sharing that.
No problem, yeah. Yeah.
Vancouver Folk Music Festival, July 19th to 21st at Jericho Beach Park. Over 60 music acts from around the world, including the Dixie Chicks, Natalie Maines, Steve Earle and the Dukes, the Waterboys, the Cat Empire, Loudon Wainwright III, Divotchka, Hannah Georges, Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, and many more. For tickets and info, go to thefestival.bc.ca. The Vancouver Folk Music Festival for the best weekend of your summer. July 19th to 21st at Jericho Beach Park.
There, welcome to Animal Voices Radio. We're going to talk about some events happening. So, of course, we all know about the, I hope you all know about the weekly chicken vigil every Friday morning at 7 a.m. till 9 a.m. at the intersection of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street. You're there every week.
Almost every week, yeah, I try to make it out there. So we always are welcoming more people, and we are now leafleting to cars. So if anyone loves leafleting, I know there's some of you out there. Come join us.
Yeah, also happening every Friday is the, of course, the shark fin protest, the shark fin soup, rather, protest happening at Sanchiwa. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Sanchiwa. Every Friday also at 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., rather than the morning, like the chicken vigil is.
Yeah.
Which is very early in the morning, which
so come in the morning, and then shark fin protest in the evening, and you will be tired and go to bed.
Exactly.
Well, that night.
And of course, in July, we have the July 27th is Veg Fest Vancouver, which I'm really excited about. That'll be happening on Granville Street from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And the same day, very important for this episode in particular, is the Empty the Tanks protest happening outside of Vancouver Aquarium from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. So you could go to the Vancouver Aquarium protest there for the morning and then go to Vancouver Veg Fest. It's a perfect day.
Make it to both. They're both very important.
Exactly. And then also you have your... how do I scroll down? The Animal Rights Vegan Support Circle. This is put on by you and Alyssa, right?
Yes, yeah.
And that happens every... No, that's not happening every... It's happening July 14th from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at Trout Lake. And for more info and to RSVP, please go to meetup.com under Animal Rights Advocacy Meetup and look for Vegan Support Circle.
Yes.
And alternatively, you can also contact...
Jackie
or Alyssa on Facebook and join the Facebook group, which I did. Also, if kind of a weird little event to talk about, if you're into wrestling, there is the and it's like it's a also a weird sort of variety show on July 12th. The Elite Canadian Champion Wrestling is putting on this fight for What's Right show. It's comedy, music, and then a wrestling show, and it's happening at the Croatian Cultural Center on July 12th at 7 p.m. It's a really interesting sounding event. There's also burlesque there. I don't know, like, if it's in something that sounds interesting to you, hey, go check it out. It's for a good cause. It's an anti-poaching event to support rhinos and anti-poaching, so that's pretty cool.
Great, thanks for sharing that. So earlier this week, I had the pleasure of speaking with Gabriella Caprithwaite about her film Blackfish, about an orca named Tillicum, and the various emotional and physical dangers to orcas and their trainers when these beautiful beings are kept in captivity. Here is that interview for you.
Gabriella, and thank you for joining me today to speak about your exciting film Blackfish, which speaks about the harm and dangers to both human and non-human animals in keeping cetaceans, particularly orcas, in captivity. Can I ask you to briefly describe what the storyline of Blackfish is all about?
Blackfish, I started Blackfish because I had a question. When I heard about the top trainer, Don Brancho, who was killed by a killer whale, Tillicum, in SeaWorld of 2010, I was very confused. I didn't understand why something like that would have happened. So I am, don't come from animal activism. I sort of, I took my, I'm a mother who took her twin boys to SeaWorld, maybe five years ago. And, so I, really you know, came at the documentary and started the embarked on making the documentary because I couldn't understand how something like that could have happened. I thought that killer whales were our friends, and they were sort of, you know, all together. I'd say, you know, if there was a version of captivity that I thought was more humane, it would have been SeaWorld's. I always thought that park was clean, and the trainers and the animals, everybody sort of looks happy and symbiotic. And I would have thought that the animals got, you know, were tremendously well cared for in that environment. So so anyway, I was confused and started making a documentary because I actually just had so many questions.
Of course. I mean, it's amazing what you can see and how things are often different behind the scenes. Why do you feel that orcas in exclusion, or I guess in particular compared to other cetaceans, were the most important animals in captivity to be addressed in this film?
I don't necessarily. I think that was just happened to be the story. As I said, I didn't come in sort of with you know, an agenda or a focus of, you know, here I need to change this industry to help this animal. I didn't come at it from that perspective. I came at it from a perspective of trying to figure out why this incident happened. So I chose that single story of you know, Tillicum, essentially, and stayed kind of with that storyline because I thought it would be a tremendously digestible way for the mainstream public to come to understand what it means for a killer whale or a highly intelligent sentient animal to be in captivity. So rather than kind of coming at it with, you know, my intention is to, you know, reveal the ills of captivity, I thought, you know, I know tons of people have done things like that, and sometimes it lands, but sometimes it lands just with the people who already knew these issues were important. My goal was to tell a story and try to get people who had never given two thoughts about the fact that they went to SeaWorld, people much like me. And so I thought, if I take an approach of telling a story and not manipulating any information, not tossing in information that doesn't relate to the story to try and get people to feel something and do something, then you know, I didn't want to take that approach. I didn't necessarily think that would be effective. So I stuck with a single narrative, and my hope is that people kind of, who never gave it two thoughts, are, I guess, urged to think about this issue, but they entered into it in a different way. They entered into it, you know, by means of trying to figure out and trying to learn about Tillicum and what could have made him do this. It's almost a different approach, I think, you know?
And that's such an important issue, obviously, as we learn in the film. I found that some of the most heartbreaking scenes of the film were the separation of the orca families, the separation of mother and child, which is unfortunately so common in many animal exploitation industries. As a mother yourself, how did learning about all of this and seeing the videos affect you?
It was tremendously, you know, difficult for me to, I guess, to learn that these things go on and continue to go on fairly frequently in all marine parks. I think in the back of your mind, you just want to imagine that the upper management or the decision makers at these parks, are certainly, you know, out to make a buck, out to, you know, keep the business model alive, but they would certainly not stand by for allowing their whales to go through tremendous grief, you know, or angst or anything like that. They wouldn't like that, that they wouldn't want that. To learn that goes on and that people know it goes on, and hear, you know, you hear the mothers grieving, and you know that everything you know about these animals is that they need to be with their social bond, you know, they need to socially bond with their families, and to know that people are you know, purposely splitting families, and because they want a certain look for certain shows in certain parks, was a profoundly disappointing moment for me, because it was, to me, that's just wrong, and I guess every way that something can be wrong.
Yeah, you just said it there. And there's a deep feeling of corruption throughout this film as the various aquaparks aim to hide or disguise all the deaths and injuries to trainers as drowning or trainer error. How is it so easy and possible for these parks to hide the truth from everyone when the autopsies told such a different story?
Right. Well, I think it's interesting. I think there's two things that are happening. I think the first thing is that the people who are in these parks, have been perpetuating kind of a certain story, a certain storyline that trainers are safe and whales are happy and their animals are happy. And, you know, I think that they've been doing that and kind of honing that story and telling themselves that story, to be perfectly honest, so they can kind of justify, you know, going to work every day and what it is that they do on a daily basis. And that story has become so powerful and ingrained, I think, in their culture that is their belief system. That they think they know what the whales want. They think they know what the whales need. They know they're doing a show, but they still think this is probably the best place for killer whales because the whales are just very loved by the trainers. I mean, that part's certainly true. But, you know, I think it's just storytelling. I think we get good at telling ourselves stories to make us justify the things that we do on a daily basis. The second part is, I think, we as audience members or passive consumers, which I sadly considered myself, you know, consider myself having played a role in, you know, we don't hold the fire to their feet ever, because I think we actually also want to believe the story. We actually want to believe that we embarked on this crazy mad science experiment to put killer whales in captivity, but that we made a friend in the process, and they love us back now, and we're just one happy family. I think that's what we tell ourselves. So I think we get anesthetized and don't want to listen to the truth. And if we hear the truth, we kind of brush it under the carpet because it doesn't square with our story. So I think in some ways we're sort of all to blame.
Mm-hmm. And I like how you said passive consumers, because that's always such an issue with all animal rights issues in our world today.
Yeah.
If these whales are released from aquaparks, how quickly do they tend to acclimate to their new free environment? And what kind of process is needed to release these whales or find them sanctuary?
Well, it's interesting. So a lot of people just say, okay, so why can't you just sort of put the killer whales back in the ocean and, you know, in the wild? And the fact is that they, you know, a good many of them wouldn't survive because they're, you know, in captivity, they're hopped up on antibiotics. They don't know how to eat live fish, you know, or chase down and hunt their own food. So for a number of reasons, you know, and some of them are sick. Some of them are not doing well. Like Tilikum is just not doing well. So, you know, I think that what the alternatives are, are... C-10, as you kind of mentioned, the sanctuary, which is essentially the cordoned off cove. You sort of place a net and kind of cordon off a little part of the ocean so you can kind of semi-release them and put them in there, but you can watch and make sure that their health is intact and whatever. You could feed them dead fish if you need to, but at least they're in a natural sort of ocean environment, and it's just a bit of a more dignified way to go about life. So that's kind of what the alternative is. Now, even that would take a tremendous amount of training, right? You'd have to sort of very slowly teach them how to eat live fish, take them off of antibiotics. There's, you know, a lot of work, and I think, you know, a lot of research went into kind of the Keiko story. And Keiko was incredibly sick and was in a park in Mexico and had been there all his life and then was released to his pod, basically was able to find his original pod group. And even though he didn't live forever, like everyone would have hoped, he still found his way to be able to live out his remaining years in the wild. So, you know, I think there's, in answer to your question, I think, you know, it does take a lot of work And a lot of research would have to go in what to do with each individual whale, because each one is very different. But essentially, these are all alternatives for them. And I see that some of the marine parks, like SeaWorld, who have tremendous financial resources, would be some of the places that I think should play a role in some of these semi-releases. And a lot of people say that there are plenty of whales that actually could acclimate and could be not only in a sea pen, but really released to the wild after, you know, tremendous amount of retraining and all that. So so it's a little, you know, complicated, but it's certainly one of the best alternatives, I think, put forth right now.
Wonderful. That gives us some hope, for sure. Most of the traders interviewed seem to have witnessed or been aware of some horrific events and as such left their positions as trainers. Can you tell me if any of them are currently working to help orcas and how?
A good many, most all of the people in Blackfish, in my film, the former trainers, are all heavily involved in basically trying to, stop sort of animals and entertainment. And they would like very much, you know, they're also sort of putting forth everything from the sea pen alternative to non-personhood, non-human rights for these animals, you know, giving them basically giving them rights and treating kind of learning to sort of view them as individuals. So there's a campaign for that. There's one ex-trainer who is actually, he does rehabilitation and release in Laguna Beach. And he, you know, mostly works with sea lions and seals, but, you know, other cetaceans as well. So they each have a hand in it, but, you know, I think for the most part, everybody is striving towards just, trying to educate the public and helping sort of create alternatives like the sea pen alternative, putting forth the end of captive breeding in marine parks, which is a way to sort of stop, you know, the marine parks from continuing to have killer whales for the next 80 years. So everybody's got a hand in it. It's kind of inspiring to see that.
It's very inspiring. Thank you so much for sharing that. And what message is this film intended to convey to the viewers?
You know, I think what I want, you know, in terms of a message, you know, I have the message that I came away with after my 2 years of research and working on the film. And, you know, my feelings, my personal feelings, are that killer whales should not be in captivity, that this goes for all. Rules should go for all, highly intelligent, sentient animals. They are not suitable to captivity, and that's, you know, this goes for elephants as well and primates. So I feel very strongly about that. I certainly think that animals for entertainment needs to go away. To me, I call that the lowest rung on the ethical totem pole. I don't think there's a place for that anymore. So those are my feelings, you know, but what I tried to do with the film was to not deliver and hand-feed a message, hand-spoon-feed a message. What I tried to do was tell a story so that everybody can have their own revelations, so that everybody can feel what they feel based on a fact that happened, based on the truth that they learn within this story. And, you know, that means when they walk away from the film, they can kind of own what they feel about it. They can kind of, you know, they were armed with information, and now they can come away and make their own decisions for themselves and their families. And, you know, I hope that those decisions are that they don't, patronize places like SeaWorld anymore. My hope is that they encourage places like that to shift their paradigms into rehab and relief or sea pen scenarios. That's my hope. But, you know, I try very hard not to, you know, deliver a message because I think people like to come to their own conclusions. and make their own life decisions based on just the facts, just based on a truthful story. So my hope is that they feel something authentic and do something great with that feeling.
And I think that's really important what you said. People do not like to get spoon-fed, you know, or told what to do. They like to come to that conclusion on their own, which is why film advocacy is so important. I know it's had a huge role in my life. Yeah.
Well, and Jackie, it's funny because I also talk about it as an inner teenager, because I know I'm a little bit like this. When I am told, or if I feel like someone is sort of manipulating information, or I don't know, not even manipulating information, but sort of telling me what it is that I should do or how it is that I should feel, it's an inner teenager. I think we just naturally sort of resist and just sort of say, well, you know, I'm smelling an agenda here for whatever reason. I think that we like for people to show us the truth, to tell us the truth and show us the story, and then we ourselves like to have a sense of agency in what it is that we do with that. You know, like you want it to be your idea that you decide to not go to SeaWorld. You don't want someone to sit there and scream at you telling you, you know, you are part of the evil if you go there. I just think that because I discovered this very purely in a pure fashion, I owed it sort of to my audience to let them discover it in the same way that I discovered it. And that is through a truthful, fact-driven story, something that happened, you know? I guess I just think that has a chance of being more potentially effective for more people.
I know there's a lot of anticipation, at least in the animal rights community, about Blackfish. What kind of response have you received so far about this film?
We have received great responses. I think the people that knew these issues are happy that the issues are going mainstream now through this movie. Since we were, you know, at Sundance and then were picked up by theatrical and broadcast by Magnolia Films, Magnolia Pictures and Skin & Films. So I think people are excited that that the film might have some sort of mainstream platforms. But I think they're, for the people that didn't know any of these issues, they're pretty shocked. People are very shocked. A lot of people say, I never knew this was going on at that park that we all have fond memories of from our childhood. So I think it's a lot of revelatory, I think reactions that we've gotten from people. That's pretty inspiring.
Great. And that kind of leads us into our final question here. Can you tell me what the plans are for getting this film out there so as many people as possible can see this?
Yeah, well, we have, overall, again, we've been picked up by Magnolia Pictures, and so it'll go to theaters. In the U.S. this summer, we were picked up by Kino Smith, so we're going to be in the theaters this summer in Canada. So, and then we have, Dogwoof in the U.K. Is going to be releasing it this summer. So, we're going to be in a bunch of countries as well, other countries. So we're sort of getting the international theatrical stage this summer. On July 26th is really the big release date. And then we go to broadcast. So then we go to CNN Films in the States and then various other broadcast stations like BBC Storyville in the UK across the world. So that's a nice sort of mainstream platform there. And then, in addition to that, I'm hoping that we can do educational screenings, and I'm hoping kids come to this. We're working closely with some organizations as well, and hoping that, the word can kind of get out there that this is a film that can hopefully, make you change the way you've been living your life just a tiny bit. That's that's my hopeful thing, but, you know, I would just be excited if the people that did see it responded positively to it and tell their friends.
Absolutely. I know I'll be definitely spreading the word about the screenings in Vancouver. Thank you so much, Gabriella, for joining me today to speak about this wonderful and very important film, Blackfish.
I so appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So Blackfish will be screening in Vancouver August 2nd to 11th and 16th to 17th at Van City Theatre, and also many other locations worldwide. To find a screening in your area, please go to blackfishmovie.com.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. This is Animal Voices News. The Bureau of Indian Standards voted unanimously last week to ban testing cosmetics on animals, mandating that all companies in India use animal-free testing alternatives from now on. The country's Central Drug Standards Control Organization will monitor all cosmetic companies to ensure testing meets the new regulations before giving its approval. India is the first South Asian country to ban cosmetic testing on animals. The ban does not, however, include other products such as household cleaners. Subchain Quiznos announced this week that it plans to phase out the use of gestation crates for pigs, which are metal enclosures used in factory farming to confine pregnant sows. Gestation crates are so small that sows are unable to turn around and often have difficulty even lying on their sides. "Our customers have made it clear that they want better treatment for pigs, and we agree," said Quiznos spokesperson Elizabeth Sapp. 5 years ago, Quiznos was among the first companies to incorporate gestation crate-free pork into its supply chain, though it is unclear what percentage of the company's current pork supply is gestation crate-free.
I'm just curious, do you ask for, like, do people ask for gestation free? How does that work?
I'm guessing they maybe just said, maybe they looked for a supplier that had gestation free, and maybe it's just the industry standard that most don't. Maybe
said some of Quiznos, they still use gestation crates. And there's a difference somewhere. That's weird.
Well, I'm thinking that it's probably all in together, I would imagine, but maybe there's just like one supplier that actually is gestation free, because I think it's just so much an industry practice that it would be difficult to even find somebody that's doing it of their own accord. Versus that's sort of what's happening now is a lot of companies are trying to put pressure onto suppliers to change that. So that's sort of what's happening. They say that it will be phased out sometime between 2017 and 2022. So it's still about 10 years away from being an actual reality that all of their pork will be gestation free. So a good reason to go vegan.
Yeah, hopefully we'll end the whole pork industry by 2017 and then we don't have to worry about it.
And then I have a nice story here for you. Two kittens were saved by staff dismantling a van in preparation for crushing at the Robin Hood Bay Waste Processing Center in St. John's, Newfoundland last week. The pair have been dubbed Robin and Hoodie. They were quite dehydrated and underweight when they were found, according to the Humane Services Department of the City of St. John's. A statement from city staff said, "The city has no idea how these black balls of fur ended up there, but we suspect they were born in the area and the mother had been using the abandoned vehicle for shelter. The kittens have been put up for adoption from the city shelter." I'm not sure if they've been adopted yet.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Carissa. So today on the show, we welcome co-founder and president of No Whales in Captivity, Annalise Sorg. No Whales in Captivity is a grassroots organization dedicated to ending marine mammals in captivity through public education, peaceful demonstrations, and media outreach. Hello, Annalise, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, great to be on back on Animal Voices. Thank you.
Thanks. So I wanted to start by asking you about No Whales in Captivity. How long has the organization been around, and can you talk about the various ways that you outreach to the public?
Okay, well, we've been around actually a little longer than Animal Voices. We were a part of the team with Rosalind Castles at the head to get Animal Voices on Co-op Radio. So that was about 20 years ago. We were formed back in 1992 by three vegan animal rights activists. one myself, of course. I was a director of the Vancouver Humane Society at the time, in charge of Animals and Entertainment Committee, working on banning wild animal acts in circuses, which we did, and then closing the Stanley Park Zoo, which we did as well.
Wow.
Yeah, and then the another of the directors, the new directors, was Brent Stewart, who's still a director at this time. And he was director of Earth Safe Canada, in charge of the Animal Rights Committee. And the third person was the late Bob Korish, who had just opened the Animal Rights Store on 4th Avenue in Kitsilano, which was an historical event in Vancouver. And the three of us decided to get together and hold a protest at the Vancouver Aquarium opposing the latest expansion plans to build bigger tanks in order to bring more whales, of course, because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The morning after that infamous protest, the Vancouver Sun ran an editorial which was titled, No Whales in Captivity. And it basically told the Vancouver Aquarium to stop it, to stop the cruelty. It's time. So after that endorsement, we decided to use the title as our official name for our group, No Whales in Captivity.
Great.
So we've been blessed throughout the years to have local and national, international media help us spread the word. Unfortunately, the Vancouver Aquarium, representing the corporate elite in Vancouver and in Canada throughout, has managed to scare the mainstream media from doing any interviews on whale captivity, probably by threatening to pull away their mighty advertising dollars. So the last few years, even if a beluga whale dies or another baby dolphin dies, nothing will be said in the media about the controversy, which still exists and is continuing to grow, because they are scared of losing that money, I believe.
Okay.
So now we mostly rely on social media to do public outreach, and we have a very strong following on Facebook, and certainly welcome all your listeners to join us on Facebook to receive updates and how to help with our campaign.
Great. Thanks so much for that. And I understand that No Whales in Captivity was instrumental in the closing of the orca tanks at the Vancouver Aquarium. Can you share some of the stories of the orcas that were previously kept captive there and what happened to them?
Oh, sad stories. Whoever's watched Blackfish will know that it is like that, not just for the orcas, but all the belugas and the dolphins. They all have tragic stories individually. The orcas used to be the bread and butter of the Vancouver Aquarium, having been the first whale jail to display an orca in captivity back in 1964. It was poor Moby Doll who got harpooned and dragged into the Burrard dry docks, where she starved to death after 86 days.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the Humane Society and the SPCA condemning this tragic situation, the aquarium saw the financial possibilities, of course, and started capturing, trading, breeding orcas. Until in 2001, after four decades of public protests, and eight dead orcas, including three dead baby orcas, they shipped the last surviving orca, her name was Biosa, to SeaWorld, where she died sick, alone, abandoned in a back tank, and only 4 months after being transferred. Biosa had a tragic, tragic life in captivity. She was captured off Iceland in 1980, and brought to the Vancouver Aquarium where with another male, Finna, and there was another male there, Hayek, who had been captured at Pender Harbor in 1968. Now, if again, Blackfish explains very well that you shouldn't mix and match orcas from different pods, but that's exactly what all aquariums did, including the Vancouver Aquarium. Anyways, Biosa had her first baby with Hayek, and that was in 1988. Basically, Biosa let the baby die. In 22 days, she starved to death, so that was pretty tragic. And then the second baby that she had was born in 1991. She was fathered by Finna, But again, Byosa didn't want to feed the baby. I guess if you were a mother, would you want your child to spend the rest of her life in captivity? No. So that is quite common with animals in captivity, mammals in captivity specifically. Anyways, this poor little orca, she was hand-reared by the aquarium staff, but she died alone, again in a tank, alone, of a brain infection only 97 days after being born. And I remember Byosa was in another tank, and she could hear the baby crying because she was bumping into the walls of the tank, and Byosa was just going crazy. It was just horrible. But she got pregnant again, and her third and last baby was born in March 1995. She only lasted 8 minutes. She bled to death in front of a whole bunch of people because the aquarium does that when they know that a whale or a dolphin is going to give birth. They call in the media. They call in, they bring in school children by the busloads, and it is just a circus for the poor whales to give birth. It's just a horrendous situation. In any case, the baby sank to the bottom of the tank, and Byosa remained floating at the top of the bank, and they allowed the baby to, the dead carcass, really, to stay inside the tank for 5 days, Jackie. I mean, five days. They had lineups, and CBC News covered this because there was lineups all the way to the parking lot from the entrance of the aquarium. For 5 days, people came to see the dead baby whale. I mean, money makers, whether they're dead or alive. It was just tragic.
Yeah, I think I remember. I was quite young at that time, but I think I remember that being in the media quite a lot.
Oh.
All the news articles. So even though, thankfully, after hearing all these stories, the orca tanks are closed, and that is a step in the right direction, there are still many other animals that are kept in captivity at the Vancouver Aquarium. Dolphins, belugas, otters, and many others still remain at this whale jail. Can you describe some of the emotional, physical, and psychological torment that these animals endure in this environment?
Oh, it's just, I mean, imagine yourself living for the rest of your life in a bathroom. But let's start with the capture of whales and dolphins, because it really is a violent and brutal situation. Moms are separated from their babies. They're screaming, confusion. Sometimes they get tangled in the nets and die. The captured animals are taken, out of their ocean homes, placed in stretchers, boarded on airplanes, shipped around the world, and placed, of course, in concrete bathtubs for the rest of their thankfully short lives, I guess, in captivity. But these poor animals, they quickly realize that if they don't perform for the audience, they're not going to get fed. And they get fed dead fish, which, by the way, are stuffed with antibiotics and antidepressants, of all things. And so for four times a day, with blasting disco music and children screaming with excitement, of course, these poor slaves of the industry have to work in horrible conditions all day long. And at night, they get no rest because at the Vancouver Aquarium, they book parties and events every night. So scientists agree now that this is a psychological and physical torment for the whales, and that's why there's this big push right now to give whales human rights so that whalers and whale jailers cannot kill or capture them anymore. So if your listeners want more info on that, please visit www.cetaceanrights.org for more info and to sign the petition. That cetacean means whales, dolphins, and porpoises. CETACEAN rights.org.
And I think India has been kind of the lead on that with giving dolphins non-human rights. So, I mean, hopefully we can follow in their footsteps.
Absolutely.
So coming up on July 27th is the Empty the Tanks demonstration. Can you tell me a bit about this event, where it will be taking place, and who can participate?
Everybody. And we encourage everybody. And really, you know, there should be a place close nearby everybody in the world, because we've got three places in Canada. We're so proud of this. Of course, the Vancouver Aquarium, we're going to hold a big protest there, and outside Marineland in Niagara Falls, Canada, and as well in Toronto, there's going to be a protest. Although there's no whale jails there, there's protests in other places where there's no whale jails, like in the United Kingdom, in Lithuania, and there's going to be in Australia, in South Africa, in the Netherlands, in Hong Kong, in Argentina. Japan is having two protests, one outside the Osaka Aquarium, the other one outside the Kamogawa SeaWorld, and of course, USA is having, I think, about 10 or 12 protests.
Wow.
They're gonna go outside SeaWorld in San Diego, in San Antonio, in Orlando, outside Miami Sea Aquarium where Lolita is, outside the Georgia Aquarium where they're trying to bring in 18 wild-caught beluga whales from Russia, outside the National Aquarium in Baltimore, the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago, where a whole bunch of our belugas, Canadian belugas, have died, the Sea Life Park in Oahu, Hawaii, Las Vegas, Mirage Hotel. So as you can see, you know, there's going to be protests everywhere. And again, if your listeners want to organize an event, because there still is time, or want to attend one of these events, please look, visit the website www.emptythetanksworldwide.com. emptythetanksworldwide.com, and the event locations are there.
Great. And what is the primary focus of this demonstration, and what do you ask that people bring or prepare?
Well, the focus is to empty the tanks of whales, obviously.
I guess I meant more like directed, like what kind of demonstration is this?
Oh, it's a peaceful demonstration. Okay. We always ask people to be respectful of the tourists who are trying to go to the aquarium. Most tourists don't understand really what this is about. Vancouverites do. There's been enough information around here. We, after all, we have closed the orca whale tank in 2001, so there's no reason for Vancouverites to not understand that it's the same with the belugas and the dolphins, and that they should not buy a ticket to go to the aquarium. It's very simple. We have been holding protests for 21 years, and we've never had a problem with the police or an arrest or any incident like that. So we hope everybody is in their best behavior, and we're going to have megaphones. And what to bring? Friends and family, really. That's whom we need. We need as many people as we can. If you want to bring your own banners, your own placards, that's great. We have plenty to give away, and to just make a big stink out there, so that, you know, the aquarium gets the message again and again and again that those beluga and dolphin tanks have to be emptied.
Okay, great. And are there any other ways that people can help no whales in captivity or help to spread the message?
Yes. The best thing you can do is join us on Facebook. I mean, we really have a strong situation there where we are able to place, you know, action alerts and petitions, and it's just a fantastic way to communicate with everybody. So we very much encourage everyone to look up No Whales in Captivity on Facebook and join us there. The other way, of course, if you're not on Facebook, if your listeners want to give us a quick call, 604-736-9514, and we'll place you on a list, on an email list, where you will as well receive action alerts and anything that will help the whales. So that's really the way to be able to help the whales right now with us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today, Annalise. And everyone that's listening, please remember to join the Empty the Tanks event at the Vancouver Aquarium or one in your location, July 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Thanks so much, Jackie.
No problem. All right, so so you've been listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
So thank you so much for joining us today. We here at Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by liking our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, and please send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We really appreciate all your comments and questions. Also, please check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from shortly after airing. So on next week's show, it's going to be a great show. I'm not exactly sure what the plans are, but it should be exciting. So please do tune in again Friday, 12 to 1 p.m. And please stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. And remember to be kind to the animals. We will leave you now with a whale song by Modest Mouse, which is about the experiences, as you've heard of earlier today, both in the Blackfish interview and the No Whales in Captivity interview, just about the way that whales are captured from the wild. Thank you so much.